Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Homeopathy World Community Blog Talk Radio, creating waves of awareness over the airwaves, via the internet, and by friends telling friends they care. Working in unity to promote homeopathy around the globe. Every Thursday, join us for a personal tour of vaccinations
and your rights
in the U.S.
If you desire to speak to the host, please press 1 at any time, and the host will be notified that there is a caller in queue. Otherwise, please hold and you will be able to listen to the show.
Legal professional, with law in particular, there are many, many different kinds of law that are state law issues, and the laws are going to vary from state to state, and I would never have the time to look up all the law, let alone compare and see what the differences are and so forth. So this is educational information, and I'll just speak in general terms here is my understanding. But as a general rule, federal law supersedes state law, and you could substitute for sort of practical purposes the word trumps for the word supersede. That is, if federal law is state law is superseded or trumped by federal law. Federal law is a higher legal authority. So workers' compensation is a state law issue, and there's going to be different worker compensation laws from state to state, different policies and laws that'll vary from state to state. But the federal law provides for those vaccines that are on the list as it concerns the Vaccine Injury Compensation Act. The federal government compensates injuries and deaths that meet the right qualifications for a defined list of vaccines. The flu vaccines are on that list. So if somebody has a flu vaccine adverse reaction, the federal law would potentially compensate them if they file a petition, the right kind of petition in the right timing and meet the right qualifications. We have a system of vaccine courts in this country that do nothing else but look at vaccine petitions for compensation for alleged vaccine injury and death. So there's a system there to deal with that. And so even if a vaccine injury would otherwise potentially be a workers' compensation issue, the federal law would supersede that state law, and that would make it a vaccine injury case with just a short point here. This comes from a U.S. National Vaccine Advisory Committee meeting on June 6, 2012. And this particular point has to do with the cost of doing all the recommended vaccines in the United States from birth to age 18. And a woman by the name of Anne Shishat, Dr. Shishat, now I don't know if I'm pronouncing her name correctly, so I just will offer my apology up front in case I am missing it here. Assistant Surgeon General of the United States Public Health Service and Director of the National Center for Immunization and Respiratory Diseases, and she addressed the Vaccine Advisory Committee in June of 2012, and this information about the cost to vaccinate one child with vaccines, were referred to as the universally recommended, although that really means here in the United States, I don't think they vaccinate anybody on Pluto or other galaxies, certainly not with Earth vaccines. So I'm not sure why they say universally. But anyway, universally recommended from birth through age 18 years of age for 1990, 2000, and 2012. So roughly a little over two-decade period. So here are the figures. Get down to the nitty-gritty here. In 1990, the recommended vaccines for children from birth through age 18 cost only $70. I was quite surprised at how low the number was. But in 1990, based on the vaccines that were required at that time, $70. 10 years later, the year 2000, there were more vaccines, of course, on the list at that point, $370. Now, that's over a 500% increase, or five-fold increase from 10 years earlier, $70 in 1990, $370 in 2000. In the year 2012, 12 years after the $370 figure, the cost is now $1,712. Roughly 4 to 5 times again. It was five-fold increase, more than a five-fold increase from 1990 to 2000, about a 4 to 5-fold increase from 2000 to 2012. This is an exponential rise. This is I'm not a mathematician, but I did finish some calculus courses in college, did pretty well in math as far as I took it. And this is an exponential increase in cost. It's an exponential increase in the number of vaccines being required. And for anybody who has a concern that more vaccines may increase the risk of adverse events, for example, this should be very, very alarming. There, of course, have been correlations, at least general correlations, in the increase of many chronic diseases, autism being just one of many of them. So some pretty disturbing stuff here. It needs to not simply slow down in terms of the rate of increase, not even simply level off. It needs to dramatically go back to where it came from, in my humble opinion, which is somewhere back to pharmaceutical industry, get your profits somewhere else. Well, let's move on here. I'm going to pick a few things here as the time allows. And just real quick reminder, you're listening to Vaccines and Your Rights in the U.S. with vaccine rights attorney Alan Phillips. And this is a dual broadcast. We're speaking to you on Freedomizer Radio at freedomizerradio.com, but also being simulcast on Homeopathy World Community. And that's all those words spelled out, homeopathyworldcommunity.com, for the website there as well. So we are pleased and delighted to be able to speak to audiences at both audiences, Freedomizer Radio and Homeopathy World Community. Pleasure to have all of you with us today. I have on my vaccinerights.com website a Q&A section that's been a common part of many websites for many years, from early days in the internet. And from time to time, I like to go back to some of the Q&A questions, because they're really good questions. And I find that from time to time over the years, as I've gone back and looked at some of the same questions, I find that I want to go back and change my answers, not because answers were incorrect, but because sometimes additional information or clarification that I've learned over the years may be helpful. And one of these is one of the early questions that, for purposes of my website's Q&A, actually came from several years ago, but it is a question that comes up over and over and over again. And the question is it constitutional for a state's religious exemption law to require membership in an organized religion with tenets opposed to immunizations? And it's a really good question, even over and over again, because there are still states that have laws on the books that will say that you are required to be a member of an organized religion. Now, there have been at least 5 state and federal court cases over the last, something like probably 30 years that I'm aware of, a little over 30 years, where these laws in states that have a church membership requirement for vaccine religious exemption, have been challenged in court. And the challenge being that they're unconstitutional. Now, there's an important point here, that the formal answer to the question is this law unconstitutional with regard to any particular law is a question that formally can only be answered by the courts. We can have our opinions. We can make our own legal arguments or what have you. But a law is not unconstitutional unless and until a court says it is, at least formally. Well, in most of the cases, these five or so court cases in state and federal courts, in fact, all of them, the laws were deemed to be unconstitutional. Now, Mississippi was an anomaly because they decided that vaccine religious exemptions are unconstitutional with regard to the federal, the U.S. Constitution. No other state in the Union has agreed with that. And the curious and ironic result is that in the state of Mississippi, vaccine religious exemptions are unconstitutional because that's what their top state court, the Mississippi State Supreme Court, ruled a little over 30 years ago. Everywhere else in the country, vaccine religious exemptions are constitutional. States can have them, and all but one state, West Virginia, all of the other 49 states, but one, West Virginia, has a religious exemption. Nobody's challenging that as being unconstitutional. So that's sort of a weird anomaly. You know, I would think, from a common sense point of view, that we have one U.S. Constitution and we would have the same rights under that Constitution throughout the whole country. But it turns out that our rights under the federal Constitution depend on how various local courts decide. And by local, I mean there could be state courts or federal district courts or federal circuit courts, courts that do not have a jurisdiction that covers the whole country. The only court that has that jurisdiction is the U.S. Supreme Court. So when any other court makes a ruling, the ruling, if that ruling generates legal precedent, and some rulings do and some don't, but if any given ruling generates legal precedent, it's only binding on that court's jurisdiction. So the state Supreme Court of Mississippi's ruling that vaccine religious exemptions are unconstitutional only applies to Mississippi. It doesn't apply to any other part of the U.S. So in Mississippi, it's unconstitutional. Now, there are ways they could deal with that. And if anybody listening is in Mississippi and would like to talk with me off the air about how they can approach that and fix that problem, I'd be glad to do it. It's possible, but a little bit difficult and convoluted. For years, I thought it was not possible, not practically possible anyway, and I figured out another possible solution. So I won't try to explain it now. It's a little bit convoluted and complicated, but I think there's a way to deal with that. So I'm happy to work with people in Mississippi to discuss that if anyone in Mississippi is interested. But in the meantime, is it constitutional? So the short answer is no, it's not constitutional, because the other four court cases that were, let's see, it was Maryland, Arkansas, New York, and let me see if I can remember who the other one was. I'm sure it'll hit me in a moment here. Anyways, at least four other states, and each time they ruled that these laws requiring church membership were unconstitutional. And we see this in other areas of law concerning religious freedom. In federal civil rights law, for example, and this is what comes up when we're dealing with healthcare workers or other employees. We're looking the vast majority of the time at federal civil rights law. And we see also that employers, they have to, the language of the law uses the word accommodate. They have to accommodate their employees' religious beliefs and practices. And what qualifies for a protected belief there is something that doesn't have to be connected to an organized religion. It certainly can be, but it absolutely does not have to be. So we see the same thing in other related areas concerning religion and the law. But there are still some states that have those laws in the books. So what does that mean? If you're in a state, I think, what was it, South Dakota, I think, if I'm remembering correctly, has one of those laws. South Carolina has one of those laws. There's at least three or four states, maybe more, that still have one of those laws where the religious exemption refers to a requirement of an organized religion. Well, we can argue that it's unconstitutional, but in that state, it's not going to be unconstitutional formally until a court says so. So technically, these laws that in a practical level are pretty clearly unconstitutional, formally, they are constitutional until a court says otherwise. So those laws are enforceable. But what I have found when I've worked with clients in those states is that it's usually possible to get the individual client the exemption even without that fulfilling that church membership requirement, because we argue to the local authorities, this is unconstitutional. Now, we're making a legal argument. We're not saying it literally, formally is. In effect, what we're saying is, if you dispute this with my client and you make my client take this to court, here's what my client's going to argue. They're going to show what the courts and all these other cases have done. And your court is going to rule in our favor. I say your court, I mean that state's court, is going to rule in our favor. And this could require the law, ultimately end up in the law being changed, which will make it easier for people to get exemptions, because a lot of people will look at the law, see church membership requirement, they'll say, I don't have that, and they stop. They don't go any farther to say, is there some way to get around that? So, that's sort of the gist there. So sometimes as a practical matter, the local authorities will allow somebody who doesn't meet the formal requirements to have the exemption anyway, because they don't want to see it go to court and potentially get the law changed, which might encourage more people to exercise the exemption. Now, somebody should challenge the law anyway, either in court or talk to their state representatives and get them to change the law to make it constitutional. But that's, you know, those are tasks that are easier said than done. Let's just leave it at that for the moment. You're listening to Vaccines and Your Rights in the U.S. with vaccine rights attorney Alan Phillips. And in just a few minutes here, my co-host Debbie Bruck will be joining me. But we're going to take just a couple of minutes here to go to break. And we appreciate all the sponsors that make this radio show and all the Freedomizer shows, Freedomizer radio shows, of which we are now a part, possible. So stay with us, folks. We'll be back with you in just a few minutes. And we've got lots more fascinating news, vaccine news, to talk with you about in just a few minutes here. We'll see you on the other side.
Vaccines are required for students, employees, immigrants, military members, and international travel. Do you know how to legally avoid them? This is vaccine rights attorney and Freedomizer radio host Alan Phillips. My vaccine exemption ebook can help you avoid the mistakes that have cost others their exemption rights. Get the authoritative guide to vaccine legal exemptions, an ebook available at freedomizerradio.com and vaccinerights.com.
Let freedom ring throughout the land.
You know the Constitution like the back of your hand. You've read books, listened to podcasts, attended lectures, surfed websites, and watched videos. You've made liberty your life's goal, but something seems to be missing. Stickers from LibertyStickers.com. Exercise your freedom of speech with the world's most dangerous bumper stickers. That's LibertyStickers.com. But wait, there's more. You can buy Liberty stickers wholesale. Get them for 99 cents each when you put 100 or more in your shopping cart in any combination. Sell them or give them away. They're great for gun shows, flea markets, fairs, outreach, and more. Earn extra money, promote freedom, and spread the word. Need custom stickers, labels, or decals for your organization or business? Liberty Stickers makes them. Go to LibertyStickers.com to order or call 877-873-9626. LibertyStickers.com, the world's most dangerous stickers.
Get ready for the epic new documentary adventure ride of your life. Shades, the motion picture. A view into the globalist domain. An Embellus and Burmese film.
Nothing in this world works the way you think it does. Nothing. Governments do not operate the way you think they do. Banks do not do what you think they do. The police department is not here for what you think it is. Nothing in your world works the way you think it does.
Speak out.
Shade the Motion Picture. Order your copy of the DVD today at ShadeTheMotionPicture.com.
This is Mercy. If you're listening to this message, warriors, you are the resistance. Warriors, you are not alone. There are pockets of resistance all around the planet. We are at the brink. Read about it in The Sovereign, newspaper of the resistance. Available now at newsstands everywhere. The Sovereign is a monthly 24-page tabloid newspaper featuring incendiary content about life during wartime in the age of Obama. Warriors, keep to date every month. Remember to read The Sovereign, newspaper of the resistance. Available at newsstands everywhere. This alert is for all you boppers out there in the big city, all you street people with an ear for the action. This is Mercy. If you're listening to this message, warriors, you are the resistance. This is Mercy. Mine will be the last voice you will ever hear. Don't be alarmed.
Want to spread awareness to your neighbors, family, and friends about what is going on in our country today? It may be things you already know, like the large number of FEMA camps spread around this country to lock up citizens like you and me. What legislators are doing to strip states and people of their sovereign rights. Or legislation giving states the power to force vaccinate under a declared state of emergency. Do your neighbors understand what is going on? William Lewis Films offers the perfect tools to inform our population about this government's tyrannical shift from a constitutional republic to a despotic democracy. Films like 911 Ripple Effect, Beyond Treason, One Nation Under Siege, Washington You're Fired, Camp FEMA, Enemy of the State, Don't Tread on Me, Blood of Patriots, The Ron Paul Uprising, even 911 in Plain Sight, William's first production, are all available at WilliamLewisFilms.com. Get your DVDs today at WilliamLewisFilms.com. Educate against the police state.
We're back with Vaccines and Your Rights in the U.S., Vaccine Rights Attorney Alan Phillips here, and joining me now for the second and third half hours, my wonderful co-host, Debbie Bruck, founder of Homeopathy World Community. Debbie, how are you doing today?
Having a great day with you, Alan. July 25th, 2013. We have a caller on the line, and perhaps you will be able to make a comment. She has a question about having a vaccine-injured child. So welcome, caller.
Certainly do my best. Please tell us your first name, caller, and what your question is, and I'll do the best I can.
Well, good morning, Mr. Phillips. My name's Angela, and I have a vaccine-injured child. She's 10 now. You know, I understand the statute of limitations, 3 years for the vaccine court, and once I found out about it, we were 3 months over that 3 year, you know, the limitation.
Right.
Talking about to file, I guess that's. I'm
right.
Not an attorney, but I was kind of interested if you're even involved with a group called COMED to make the vaccine safe, or are you more working with vaccine exemptions and vaccine injury cases?
Sure, and there's at least a couple of different questions in there, and I'll do my best. COMED,
you sound very
is...
knowledgeable, and thank you for hearing my questions.
Oh, well, thank you for calling in and presenting it. And first of all, let me just, you know, offer my sincere sympathy and concern for having a vaccine-injured child. I wish I could say that I'm surprised that I hardly ever hear about it. It never happens, but, of course, I hear about it all the time. And
yes.
Every time I do, I am moved even more to commit even more strongly and more firmly to the work that I do and to the goals that I pursue with many, many other equally committed people, all of us working in the different areas that we either specialize in or are able to contribute in one way or another, to try and bring some sanity to an insane world, which it certainly is on the vaccine issue. And of course, we could name many other issues. Sadly, it's not just vaccines, but that, of course, as you know, is my focus. Now, my focus professionally is exemptions and waivers, and then I work with vaccine legislative activists as well. And I don't work with vaccine injury cases. I have a certain amount of what I think of as working knowledge about the vaccine injury program and how that works. And yes, there is a 3-year statute of limitations, which means you have 3 years from the time of an injury. There are, it's not always quite that cut and dried. Statutes of limitations generally, and the specifics can vary from state to state or situation to situation, just depending on what, statute of limitations is a general concept that applies, in all state and federal courts. But there can be different variations on the laws, different lengths of time for different kinds of injuries or issues and so forth. There can be circumstances where a statute of limitations will not start until certain events happen. It won't start running, or it may be tolled, which means it temporarily stops running for some reason. So it's not necessarily always literally X amount of time from the point something happens, but often it is. And I couldn't give you specifics about when precisely the statute of limitations in a vaccine injury case might be told or delayed before it starts or whatever, but at least theoretically or hypothetically that could happen. But generally it's going to be something like from the time the injury occurs, the time that somebody knew or should have known there was an injury, that would probably be what would trigger. That's a general legal principle, not necessarily the precise language in this kind of situation, a vaccine injury. But as a general concept, a statute of limitations will start running at the time that the event occurs or that someone knew or should have known, that the triggering event, that would trigger the start of the statute of limitations occurs.
Because of my child was hospitalized the day that the vaccines happened, and there was two sets of doctors, and they had written down possible vaccine reaction. It's in the notes.
Right.
That was the date of the occurrence.
Yeah.
That's
and
when
that would,
the time started.
Yeah, that would seem to be a real clear indication then at that point. Because I've heard of people, there was one court case where a medical doctor was injured by hepatitis B vaccine, but there was a period of time, I think it was over 3 years, before she actually had persistent severe symptoms that would allow her to file a petition. Because you can't, if you have a fever for a day and get well, you can't file a petition. You have to have symptoms. I believe they have to persist for 6 months. The vaccine injury compensation program is not for minor injuries. Not for
Correct.
Really small issues. And so you have to meet certain criteria to be able to file at all. And this medical doctor did not qualify to file in terms of the injury because she had intermittent symptoms and then it became ultimately full-blown multiple sclerosis. But it was over a 3-year period before it got to that. And the court came up with a ruling that is just seriously disturbing from a common sense point of view, because she did not qualify to file a petition in terms of the nature of the injury until after the statute of limitations had run. And what the court was all about, what the case was all about was, well, the statute of limitations shouldn't run until she qualifies to file the petition. So sort of by definition, the court's ruling said that she, people in her situation, have no access to the vaccine injury compensation program, even though there's clear medical evidence proving that the vaccine caused the injury.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just you just got to kind of pull your hair out on cases like that. Yeah, frustrating would be the understatement. I mean, I can think of things much less severe than that that were, are frustrating to me. This goes beyond frustration, but maybe that's just me. But I'm so outraged so much of the time at the way this issue plays out in the real world. You know, we have many, many well-meaning, good human beings on the planet today, but there are just enough people in key decision-making positions who are making bizarre decisions, or decisions that are serving special interest or private interest or self-interest rather than public interest, even though they're in a position where they're supposed to be serving the public interest. So it's really, there are a lot of disturbing things that go on in the world today, and the vaccine arena is one of the more disturbing ones, because the consequences are that people are injured and killed unnecessarily as a result of the policy.
Correct.
And huge profits are made, which is at least part of what fuels the bad policy. And the result then, of course, the unescapable result or conclusion is that there are people who are willing to put money above the quality of life, and in many instances, the actual lives of others. We are expendable for the sake of profit, and that's just such a... There aren't words to describe, you know, I could say that's so wrong and so bad, and the words that I could say even off the air seem inadequate to me, let alone the ones I can say on the air, but, you know, that's what we're living with. Yes, please.
If I may ask a follow-up question. November 29, 2012, there was the, maybe it was the House Ways and Means Committee, the federal reaction to the rise in autism. Have you had a chance to watch that? It's about 3 hours.
I haven't watched the whole thing. I've watched parts of it.
Oh, it's good. It's good.
And what I wonder is, you know, what was the effect or the result? And it brings up, and let me see if I'm addressing, I'm going to talk about something else that actually ran across just this morning, because I think it's a similar issue in terms of what it brings up for me. I had a gentleman... email me. He's a former client. He's a dentist, so he has extensive formal medical training. And he was raising a question with regard to healthcare workers. Couldn't they take vitamin D supplements, do a blood test, show the vitamin D levels, and say, look, you know, I'm protected from the flu? And there's actually research, peer-reviewed published research that shows that vitamin D protects better than flu shots. Mm-hmm. And so if it was really about, you know, people being well, they wouldn't be requiring all the nurses to get flu shots. They'd be handing out vitamin D to everyone, visitors and employees, when they walk in the hospital door. Please take our, you know, vitamin D supplement to protect yourself and others or whatever. And this is a sort of a fundamental, I mean this in the absolute most positive and constructive way, but I'm going to phrase this as a form of criticism, but I mean it in a very positive way. I see throughout the alternative vaccine community that people make a fundamental misstep over and over again, and it's going to sound funny until I explain it, so hear me out on the point.
I am.
That people keep trying to fight this battle by pointing to the facts and the science about what's really going on. Now, ultimately, of course, that is the fundamental issue. What is really going on in the real three-dimensional world that we live in? What's really going on? What is the true science, the real science, and so forth? So, somebody once misunderstood me when I was making a similar point that I was saying, "Oh, the science doesn't really matter." No, of course, the science matters. Ultimately, that is the matter. That is the issue. But I'm speaking more in terms of strategy. How do we get from where we are now? Corrupt society, children in particular, but adults as well, expendable for the sake of profits and perhaps other agendas, to a place of sanity. And when we argue, when we think in logical terms about what's really going on scientifically, even though that's ultimately where we need to end up in terms of where the spotlight needs to be and so forth, you know, people have been arguing the facts for decades, and it hasn't gotten us anywhere. And I'm not suggesting, again, that the facts aren't relevant, but there's a whole separate target that we're not focusing on that is the overwhelmingly larger short-term problem, and that is the corruption, the politics, because it doesn't matter how clear we are about we are about all the science. Nobody's ever going to hear it until we can get it on the mainstream news, or until we can bring down or take out or reform, whatever it ends up being, the people who are in the decision-making positions that control the flow of information, that control people's thinking on the whole, sufficiently enough to keep the truth suppressed for decades at a time.
Mm-hmm.
So we have to rethink, you know, we have to keep looking at and trying to find out what the science is, absolutely. But we have a more immediate need, because all of the truth is going to be irrelevant if nobody ever hears it. So the question is, how do we...
Please, go ahead. November 29th, in that meeting that they had, they talked about the Paul Thorsen, how he's a wanted fugitive, and he's the one that did a lot of the studies with the vaccines, proving the safety of it. And they called Dr. Bull, who was the head of the CDC, on the carpet. It was interesting, her responses. You might be highly interested in watching the majority of that.
Yeah, I could make an educated guess that the responses were going to be defensive in nature and defensive and dismissive in nature.
I'll get you that study. She stuttered. She knocked her nameplate off.
I didn't see that.
And Katie Wright. Katie Wright was sitting behind her. Katie Wright of Autism Speaks, you know, her parents. She's a friend of mine.
Oh, okay.
And she's rolling her eyes. Katie Wright didn't realize that she was being filmed. And she's rolling her eyes. She throws her hands up in the air at one point. It's kind of comical to watch her in the back as Dr. Boyle is talking. It's just, that's a riot. And Katie's the one with blonde hair. I mean, you can't miss her. She's very facial expressions. It's something else. It is.
Now, I've heard from multiple sources that this was just an outstanding, you know, the whole event was just outstanding, because a lot of people made some really good points, got some good points aired, and presumably in front of some people who have the potential to pick up the ball and run or make a difference or what have you. You know, my question, and I applaud, I mean, to have gotten to that point at that far and to get that information out is an amazing success.
Yeah.
And I'm, you know, I'm delighted that it occurred. I'm extremely happy and excited, you know, that it went as well as you and others have reported it to go.
Mm-hmm.
My follow-up question, you know, after we get through, and I don't mean, I mean this in a positive way, after we get through congratulating ourselves, because as an alternative community, this is a milestone.
It is. So, it was remarkable.
But my follow-up question is, okay, now what? You know, was that just a momentary embarrassment and we're back to business as usual? You know, or is there something that has happened or can happen as a follow-up to that? I see a lot of encouraging things going on in the alternative vaccine community. It seems that there are more and more people who are becoming aware, who are asking questions. But at the same time, I see this enormous vaccine agenda just rolling down the track at full speed anyway. You know, we've talked recently on this show, and I've talked on other shows about how recently, and maybe still presently, there were something on the order of about 100 vaccine bills pending in about 30 or more than 30 states. This is an enormously active area in the state legislatures at this point. And most
especially
of those
California.
Bills... Yeah, most of those bills are pro-vaccine bills. If they get passed and become law, you know, more vaccines for more kids, more vaccines for adults. Adults are now being targeted for vaccine mandates. Not just the hospital policy, which mostly policy as opposed to state law, although
but
there are...
But you're a bad parent if you do not get this vaccine. You're not protecting your child if you do not get this X amount of vaccine.
Right, and every vaccine that comes out, you know, it's the same line. Now, you know, more and more people are, I think, becoming aware and asking questions, and yet the same line, the same train is still rolling down the same track, and it doesn't seem to be slowing up any.
No.
So at some point, you know, there's going to be a head-on collision, and who knows what's going to happen, you know, but because when enough people become aware, you know, it's sort of like the snowball rolling down the hill. It's going to get, you know, it's getting bigger, and it's going to get,
yes,
going to continue to get bigger, and the rate at which it grows could very potentially, very well increase as well, not just
from that hearing that we had. The gentleman, I believe he's from Maine, Elijah Cummings.
Mm-hmm.
He was very forceful and wanted more hearings. And a Representative Issa from the state of California was also very concerned, but for some reason fracking came into his speech with the autism. I didn't quite get that, but I really didn't follow the fracking part with the autism, but I don't know.
Well,
but those two gentlemen, I do believe, will have further hearings.
Well, I certainly hope so.
Hope.
I mean, there is, as I certainly don't have to tell you, that there's tremendous well-orchestrated efforts to keep all this suppressed or low-key or off the table, off the radar, and for obvious reasons, because if this reaches a point where it becomes more openly understood, known, and accepted, the consequences are, I think, hard to determine, but potentially very far-reaching for the healthcare as we know it today. Vaccines is such a well-established cornerstone of allopathic medicine that if that gets uprooted, I think it, you know, not only causes serious problems just on that issue, but I think it would be the thread that unravels ultimately, potentially far beyond just the vaccine issue itself. Because what's going to happen once vaccines are revealed for the problems that they truly are, there's going to be a backing away from vaccines. And as that occurs, there's going to be a drop
anger
in the rate of many childhood chronic diseases.
Oh,
and
yeah.
As that occurs, there's going to be a drop in pharmaceutical profits, and that industry is going to be scrambling to try to maintain or replace the profits that they'll be losing. And this is just going to have a ripple effect throughout the entire healthcare industry, I think. Even if nothing similar was going on in any other part of the industry, even if it was only vaccines where that was happening. So it'll be really interesting to see how this plays out over the long term. But as I keep saying, failure is not an option. This is not one of those things. You know, I'm not going to go to my grave saying, at least I tried. You know, I didn't come in here, you know, to go out saying I gave it my best. You know, I'm going to go out.
You want to make a difference.
Yeah, I'm going to go out, you know, knowing that things have been changed. That's my plan, and I'm sticking to it. So...
Well, what about
anyway.
CoMed? I mean, they work for the United Nations. That's even a bigger realm.
Well, that's the Coalition for Mercury-Free Drugs, and they go by CoMed for short. I'm not an expert on them. I certainly am familiar with their primary researcher, Dr. Paul King, and he's done mercury on research on mercury. Yeah, and he's been on one of my other shows.
He loves to talk. He loves to talk.
He has a lot to say. Dr.
Yes,
King,
he does.
He's done research on mercury for years and years and years, and he's researched the medical literature thoroughly. He knows the subject inside and out, and of course you can't research mercury without getting into vaccines.
True.
And this is the organization that acquired CDC emails by using the Freedom of Information
Act. Reverend
yes.
Lisa Sykes.
Yes, yes.
Less, I mean, she's going to be the Susan B. Anthony for our cause, I think. I think in the
she's
future, they're going to look back, and she will be the Susan B. Anthony for us, at least
yeah.
the female same part. The,
Sure, sure. Yeah, so they come up with these emails from the CDC where the CDC officials and study authors are emailing back and forth saying, you know, what do we do with this data we have that shows when we took the mercury out of vaccines, the autism rates went down? And they decided not to publish the data, and they published a study that was known informally as the Danish study because it looked at Danish children, and
that's
the Danish
right.
study is the one that quote-unquote proves that vaccines don't cause autism. And the only way they were able to show that was by deliberately, fraudulently, I would say, fraudulently, but certainly deliberately, withholding data that showed exactly the opposite.
Uh-huh.
And this is the kind of thing that ought to be in the mainstream news so people understand that the government, that some people in our government are in collusion with industry, that are deliberately lying to us, that people are suffering needlessly because of it. And this is a, you know, that's a study that had an international impact. You know, I've known people who looked at the fraud there and called it genocide. I don't know whether or not
that's
a word that by strict definition applies or not, but I tell you, the spirit of the word absolutely applies. Somebody who knowingly commits an act, engages in behavior that is going to cause widespread harm internationally. It's hard to shoot down that word, at least if not literally by way of analogy.
Well, we have too many people on the planet. What else are they supposed to do?
Yeah, you got to clean up the mess somehow, right? And this is a whole separate, interesting topic of discussion. And obviously, there's people who have lots of different opinions and theories about how many people the planet can sustain. But you know, we have the resources on this planet to sustain far more people than we have now. What we haven't ever had to date is the collective will to take the steps that are available to us to take. We have the technology, we have the means, for example, to feed everybody on the planet. We have just never had the collective will as a species internationally to do what we need to feed ourselves. That's a pretty disturbing thing right there when you look at it. When you look at the extreme wealth that the small percentage of wealthiest people have, there is just literally no excuse at all for anybody anywhere on the planet to be hungry because we have the resources to do it.
True.
And what this means is that, and all of us, I think, are complicit in this to one degree or another. So I'm not trying to blame the wealthy. I think all of us have the ability. And if everybody in the world took, you know, 1/100th of their income, which we could probably all do easily, most of us could do easily, and, you know, and put it into a pool to feed hungry people, there probably wouldn't be any hungry people in the world today. So I'm not blaming anybody else. I think I have a share in the responsibility too. But the point is that we as a species are, have really let ourselves down here. We have the technology, the means to do all this, and probably to feed, you know, 9 or 10 or 12 billion. Now, again, you know, different experts will disagree about what the ultimate capacity is, but the capacity is far greater than what we have right now. It's not that we've outgrown ourselves and now we have to find some covert way to knock people off so that we can get down to a sustainable level. That's not the condition that we're in today. So to the extent that there is, and there certainly is some evidence to support it, to the extent that there is some sort of fertility agenda or population control or eugenics or whatever, and there's a lot of different ideas about exactly what that agenda is or may be, but to the extent that there are those kinds of agendas, they're not justifiable purely on population numbers, in my opinion.
Mm-hmm.
We've got to go to break here. This has been thank you for your questions and your conversation. We always love it when people call in, and you've certainly stimulated my thinking today, and I hope our listeners as well.
You should look at ComEd. I'm a big fan of ComEd because I think they're making a worldwide difference, like the Mercury Conference in Kenya. I think that was 2011,
yep.
October.
Yeah, they have been active on both national and international levels, and they deserve to be highly commended.
And that WHO representative ran out of the room. Lisa told me about that. The WHO representative ran out of the meeting. You know, when they don't like something that's going on, they'll walk out of the meeting in defiance. She physically ran. Wouldn't you love to have been there?
Yeah, I mean, that sounds more like a fear reaction than a protest reaction.
Oh, she was mad. She was angry.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, well.
Well, thank you for letting me be on here.
Sure. Thank you for joining us today. We're our great pleasure to have you. You're listening
Bye-bye,
to
Angela. Vaccine.
You're listening to Vaccines and Your Rights in the U.S. with Vaccine Rights Attorney Alan Phillips and my wonderful co-host, who's been unusually quiet. But we'll bring Debbie back in after break and see if we can't rev her up a little bit and talk about some more vaccine news. Vaccines and Rights in the U.S. on FreedomizerRadio.com and Homeopathy World Community Radio as well. Stay with us, folks. We will be back with you in just a few minutes.
Hello, everyone. Proof here again. I want to let you know about our brand new sponsor, Silver Leaf Tea. Now, as you guys know that have listened to me for years, I am a tea aficionado. I have hundreds of different flavors and styles at my house, and Silver Leaf has exactly the kind of stuff that I look for. I love loose tea, great antioxidants. I just love the taste of it, and this Silver Leaf has black, they have green, they have white, they have organic. Great for hot tea and iced tea. Silver Leaf Tea, it's right on our website, freedomizerradio.com. And check it out and order it, Silver Leaf Tea.
We are so pleased to announce ESP Botanicals is now sponsoring Freedomizer Radio. They have a bath and body line of products made for keeping your skin beautiful and healthy. But it's also for psoriasis, eczema, rosacea, and dermatitis treatment. They are meticulously prepared skincare products made from the best botanicals available. Committed to buying only from the growers when they can and using the highest quality cold-pressed oils, botanical organic additives, the best steam-expressed essential oils, and the least processed carrier oils that are available in today's marketplace. Pamper yourself or someone special in your life. Give the gift of beautiful, glowing skin. ESPBotanicals.com. Thank you so much for supporting us at Freedomizer Radio.
Hello again, Freedomist. Proof is here, and I want to talk to you about a brand new soda maker called SodaStream. Now, the Proof House has had SodaStream for about a year, and we love the thing. We use it quite often. With SodaStream, you can have fresh-made soda in seconds. One of the big things we like about it is that there's no high-fructose corn syrup and no aspartame. There's over 60 flavors, or you can create your own. Not just sodas, they also have iced teas and energy drinks. Here at the Proof House, we make egg cream sodas all the time. Some other facts to consider here, there's no electricity, no more wasted bottles and cans, and the most important thing is that it tastes great. Keep in mind, too, this is a perfect family present for Christmas, or, hey, just surprise the family with something great. Also, for a limited time, there's free shipping, so go to FreedomizerRadio.com and look for the SodaStream link, and I hope you check out the product. That's SodaStream right on FreedomizerRadio.com. Hey, guys, Proof here. Guess what? I just got a cell phone. Hey, for everyone that knows me, I'm not a fan of cell phones, but I just signed up with a company called Solavay. And Solavay is offering a plan right now with unlimited phone, text, and web for only $49 a month. Plus, if you refer a friend or two, you get a discounted rate for everyone you refer for as long as they have Solavay, not just for the first month, but for the whole time that person has Solavay. You sign up enough people, and Solavay pays you every month. What other cell phone company is going to pay you for service? Anyway, go to Solavay.com/freedomizer. That's Solavay, Solavei.com/freedomizer. Learn all about it. Plus, and another kicker, if you sign up 3 people under you, you'll get another month for free as well. Plus, they're going to pay you cash. Anyway, solavay.com/freedomizer.
We are back. You're listening to Vaccines and Your Rights in the U.S. This is Vaccine Rights Attorney Alan Phillips, and with me, my wonderful host, Debbie Bruck, founder of Homeopathy World Community. Debbie, you got
welcome.
Me. Yeah, and glad to, glad
no
to have you here. You've been here.
I am here in the background. You were having a great conversation. I didn't think I had anything to contribute, so I just let it roll. And right now I would say that, you know, she was talking a considerable amount about mercury in vaccines. Well, the Liberty Beacon has an article called Vaccine Ingredients and Vaccine Secrets by the Liberty Beacon staff, Sarah Kane. And the concern is for more than simply the mercury. Of course, it would be great because we know you don't want to eat fish that have mercury. We know the toxicity of heavy metals and mercury. If you break a thermometer, then you have to call something to clean it up. You know, it's not something that you just can touch willy-nilly. So here we have a list of the ingredients, some of them with content about it. For instance, aborted baby fetal tissue and human albumin. And, you know, I'm going to be talking about allergies in the last 30 minutes, and people are allergic to proteins. So if you're inserting proteins that are foreign, you're going to expect an allergic reaction. Then she talks about formaldehyde. Formaldehyde is a preservative, and it is oxidized in the human body to become formic acid. It's an ingredient in bee and venom, and I'll tell you, formic acid, formica rufa, is also a homeopathic remedy for gout, and there's a lot of adverse reactions to that. The next thing that's listed is mercury. For the toxicity of mercury, you can just probably go to any CDC site and find out. It's the second most poisonous element known to mankind, second to uranium and its derivatives. It's a neurotoxin. Then she has listed antifreeze, ethylene glycol. It's an ingredient.
Because we don't want our vaccines freezing on us.
Well, we want them to keep going. You know, we want them to freeze up or to get overheated in the tank. So,
exactly.
So that is in the polio vaccine, and it is also classified as very toxic. So let's see, that's the antifreeze element. It's known to be dangerous and will affect the kidney, the liver, the blood, and the central nervous system. Then we have aluminum. We are learning so much more about this element on the periodic chart as being carcinogenic, as affecting the blood, as being a neurotoxin and a respiratory toxicant. It's implicated in brain damage and is suspected in Alzheimer's, dementia, convulsions, and comas. We know that you do not want to be cooking any of your foods with aluminum. That means the aluminum foil's got to go. Aluminum pans, cooking your tea water in aluminum, don't do it, because over time those particles are going to be affecting your whole system and your brain. Then we have 2-phenol ethanol, another suspected carcinogen, phenol, another carcinogen, cardiovascular and blood toxicant, methanol. So all of these things sound like something you should be putting in your car, your automobile. It is a volatile, flammable, poisonous liquid alcohol. It's used as a solvent, similar to the antifreeze compound in fuel. Then we go to borax. Borax, we might think about for putting along the edges of your cabinetry, along the baseline of your home, as a pesticide to kill ants. Well, it is another thing that's going to disrupt human function as well, the cardiovascular system, a blood toxicant, an endocrine toxicant. And as we do this radio show right now, we are live. We're talking about all of these different things that are in the vaccines. And so, you know, you can look it up anywhere. The endocrine toxicant, the gastrointestinal toxicant, liver toxicant, neurological, I'm going on and on and on. And, you know, you can check all of the studies that were done in mice, rats, rabbits, other living organisms, and the effects are going to be profound, not only in them, but in humans. The fertility and reproductive rates are drastically reduced. That is from the borax. A couple more ingredients that people should know about, and then you can go on to the next topic. This is covering a wide spectrum of things. Glutaraldehyde is also a toxic and causes severe eye, nose, throat, and lung irritations, along with headaches, drowsiness, and dizziness. It's like a nerve gas. And so these, like Agent Orange and things like that, you can suspect that people get an allergic reaction to these ingredients if they're inserted into the body. MSG, monosodium glutamate, a synthetic flavor enhancer, and in a 1995 report by the Federation of American Societies of Experimental Biology, two groups of people were defined as intolerant of MSG. Everybody knows about getting a migraine from this particular ingredient that's inserted into Chinese food and other foods as an enhancer. Sulfate and phosphate compounds. Typically, we know sulfur drugs are part of the antibiotics that are given to help people to get heal from infection. And these drugs now are becoming, or people are becoming resistant, or the viruses and the bacteria are becoming resistant to the use of these drugs. So sulfate and phosphate, and that kind of reminds me of the bisphosphonal A must have phosphates in it, which will cause permanent damage to the immune system. Ammonium sulfate is another ingredient that's mixed with ammonia and sulfuric acid. So think about those acids and what they're going to do to your liver, to your respiratory tract. Oh, my, there's still more ingredients. I'm going to stop right here, unless you want me to go further.
Well, Debbie, what you've already given us is just this incredible list. And, of course, for just a few brief moments to play devil's advocate, just to provide some not so much balance, because I'm not sure there is any balance here, but to give a little bit of the other side of the story. The argument that we hear from the mainstream folks is that, well, yes, these ingredients are in vaccines, but they're in such minute quantities that, you know, they don't cause any harm. I know I have read at least once early in my years of vaccine, personal vaccine research at this point, there was a poison control center in Australia that had said there is no acceptable level of, and which is the one, the embalming fluid?
Formaldehyde.
Formaldehyde. They said there's no acceptable level of formaldehyde to put in a human body. Of course, you know, the proof is in the pudding, as the saying goes, and the scope and the reality and truth about vaccine adverse events is something that is has been and continues to be substantially and actively suppressed. I had someone email me just recently saying they had a child that had a vaccine reaction, and they were asking the doctor to report it, and the doctor's response was to, you know, get out of my practice. You know, you go get another doctor, you know. And they are required, the doctors are required under federal law to report suspected adverse events, and this doctor wanted nothing to do with it. And this is probably, now this is anecdotal, of course, as an isolated instance, but this is the kind of thing I hear over and over again from all around the country, and I'm very much of the impression that this is far more likely the status quo than it is the occasional angry, irritable doctor. There is just tremendous pressure in the medical community to toe the party line. And the party line here is the pharmaceutical industry, to a large extent, is directly or indirectly where you get your income. It's your lifeblood. You know, they subsidize medical schools. They provide the drugs that the doctors are trained to prescribe and so forth, you know, and you don't bite the hand that feeds you, so to speak. Now, it's sad that that little maxim wins out over any true, honest, objective, open effort to try to find out what the real scope of the vaccine adverse events actually is. So I find it very disturbing. But, you know, as I keep saying, but I think it bears repeating, CDC, FDA, AAPS, they're just different government, non-government organizations, authoritative organizations that have to tell us that somewhere on the order of 90 to 99% of the adverse events never get reported. So we don't know what the scope is. We
Don't know whether they have tested for all of these things in the vaccines. Have they actually tested?
You mean have they done studies to see whether the vaccines are harmful, or you mean have they tested to see what's actually in the vaccines? Or?
Yeah, well, they would have to do two kinds of tests. They would have to take the amount of formaldehyde and test what happens to the individual with that amount of formaldehyde. And then they would have to do another test, and then, you know, a group that gets a placebo. And then they would have to do another test of what happens when you combine the formaldehyde with all these other ingredients and see if there's some kind of a different response, as, you know, how many things can you bombard the body with and expect it to be able to be responsive in a healthy way.
Yeah, and that's a really good point, Debbie. I have seen information talking about that, yes, mercury is highly toxic, and yes, aluminum is problematic, but the combination of the two is problematic in a way that is substantially worse than the sum of the parts, so to speak, the sum of the effects individually and separately. And we have this whole list of ingredients that you just read only part of the list. Who knows what any or all of these in what combinations have, what kinds of effects that are completely different from the effects of each of these ingredients separately and alone when there have been testing. And there have been times when tests have been done to, quote-unquote, prove that the ingredients are okay, but they're looking at, for example, what happens when you ingest mercury, which is a whole different question from the question, what happens when you inject mercury? So,
absolutely.
So there are all kinds of little tricks done to try and make it look like everything's okay when we don't know. You know, we don't have the information to tell us for sure what exactly is going on. So it is very
And I'd like to address that formaldehyde question, because I went to the CDC.gov website on formaldehyde. And we know that anybody using it, like an embalming, a person using it for embalming, has to have an exhaust ventilation system that effectively reduces the embalmer's exposure below the OSHA permissible limit of 0.75 parts per million. And so we don't really know what is the amount that's in the vaccine. And there's a lot of literature that people can read about this, showing specifically that formaldehyde is a carcinogen. It means that it will create cancer in the living organism. So, and if you have a lifetime, you know, how many injections are you getting? You have to add that up too, because it may be accumulating in the body. So that's another question. So if the medical science has addressed all of these issues specifically and have given us proof that they are safe, that's one thing. But the fact that we have this proof here on the government websites about carcinogens and how to keep just the ventilation system of breathing it, you know, that small amount, through aeration, then what if you're actually taking it and putting it into the body? That's a question I have.
Right. You're talking about less than one part per million in the air. And that is something different than injecting it directly into the bloodstream. And, of course, you're talking
right.
about adult employees, which is something different than something you would inject into an infant or child. So there are all
without
these,
an immune system, yeah.
Right, right. All these differences, all these unknowns, all of these things that haven't been studied or adequately studied, if at all. Huge unknowns, and yet the, as I keep saying, the train keeps barreling down the track full speed as though all these things either have been done or are irrelevant. It's like the National Institutes of Health saying we don't need to do a study comparing vaccinated children's health with unvaccinated children's health because the vaccine program is safe. You know, that's a polite description for that would be to call it circular reasoning. We're using a preconceived notion about the result to justify not doing the study at all. That's just absurd that anybody in a who's a professional would argue something so completely irrational as that is just really, really disturbing. I don't think it says that the person who's arguing it is stupid. I think it says that the person who's arguing it thinks all of us are stupid, that they can say that and we'll all go, oh, okay, that makes sense, sure. It is just amazing. And maybe some of us are not able to hear that and see the obvious absurdity of it. But it's almost like it doesn't matter what they say. As long as they say something, they have fulfilled the role of filling the dead space, you know, with something. And then they just go about their business anyway. Some of the things that we hear coming out of officials are just crazy, and yet they're still in control. They're still running things, and it almost doesn't matter what they say. And sometimes I think it really doesn't, literally doesn't matter what they say, whether it makes sense or not, because they're still going to do whatever they're going to do, and they're the one in the driver's seat, so they can, you know,
pedal the metal. Well, we're going to have to do something about that situation, and we can't let it go on forever. So the New York Times has this article today, or yesterday, July 24th. It's called Whooping Cough Vaccine Lags in Efficiency. Whooping cough for pertussis is on the rise in California. The incidence of the disease rose in 2010 to the highest level in 50 years. One reason may be the change from the whole cell vaccine to the currently used acellular version. So that's a whole other issue that needs examination to figure out, did they make a mistake by changing the formulation?
The reason they changed that formulation was because of the severe adverse events they were getting with the first vaccine. So if what they're suggesting is we need to go back to the other vaccine, that's a big problem.
Yes, because the first type, the whole cell, had irritation at the vaccine site and some severe seizures, one in 2,000 cases. And the new vaccine has been used since 1996, but they're saying it's ineffective, showing the rise in this type of thing. And the BMJ, there's an article there all about it as well, besides the commentary on the New York Times. It's a total PDF file all about, let's see, the title of this article is The Effectiveness of Pertussis Vaccines for Adolescents and Adults, a Case Control Study. And I'm sure that there are, as you said earlier, many other things that people can do to support their immune system with other types of activities like taking the vitamin D. As a matter of fact, they actually looks like they published my comment on here, which is nice. I also recommended on the website that people who are getting the vaccine can help with the data collection for adverse effects by keeping a written record of exactly which shots and vaccines you and your child have received. Put down the manufacturer name and the vaccine lot. Write down and describe in detail any serious health problems that you have noticed from the vaccine from hours, days, and weeks following the injection. They also have no prescription drugs that will cure the natural pertussis infection, but typically The doctor will give an antibiotic to prevent transmission of the disease and to prevent the secondary infections that might occur, bronchitis, pneumonia, and otitis. Remembering always that you will get lifelong immunity from getting the disease. You know, I think pertussis is not a very pleasant disease to get. So you do want to just build up your immunity and hopefully find ways like go to the chiropractor, the acupuncturist, the naturopath, or homeopathy to help and improve your diet. Support your gut biology. Support that flora with, the probiotics, kombucha, vitamin C, vitamin D, sunlight, lots and lots of fluids to clear everything out and help the drainage. Those are the things, the course of action that people can take, and always see your physician. So that is another thing that I wanted to mention before you have to go to break or something.
Well, thanks for getting that in, Debbie. Boy, you've been a wealth of information today. I really appreciate it. Let me make a couple, just a real quick mentions of a couple of news articles. I won't go into any depth, just to let people know a little bit about what's going on around the world, because there's some interesting things happening in the vaccine arena. We'll go to break shortly after that, and we'll be back with you, Debbie, and talking to us about homeopathy today, as we ordinarily do in the last half hour of our two-hour segment. And, for example, here's an article from a Saigon Vietnamese website, although it's an English version of the site. Vietnam discontinues two hepatitis B vaccines. They had a tragic incident where three newborn babies died after a routine vaccination in the Hoang Ho district. I'm sure I'm not saying that correctly, but please forgive me, in the province of Quang Tri. Anyway, back in a few days ago, the Department of Health decided to discontinue two vaccine lots in Vietnam. Health officials, of course, are saying to everyone not to be alarmed, be calm, and keep bringing your kids in for vaccination, which you have to really wonder, you know, how can they say that, but, you know, how could you expect anybody to believe it either? But in any case, this is interesting because we just talked about recently about how Japan stopped recommending the HPV vaccine because of the substantial number of adverse events they were having. And now we've got Vietnam discontinuing a couple of hepatitis B vaccines. So I think this bodes well for overall awareness. Now, we're probably not hearing any of this in mainstream news here in the States. This is in alternative circles. But the fact that it's happening is, I think, encouraging because there's been, practices in the past, at least in the U.S., with problematic vaccine lots have been identified at times in the past in the U.S. and nothing done about it. Now, we did have had a rotavirus vaccine, for example, pulled off the market after it was causing intussusception, a blockage in the colon or in the digestive system. That was finally acknowledged and a vaccine was taken off the market. But for years, there were hot lots, as they called them, identified.
Is that from the hepatitis B, the intussusception?
No, the rotavirus vaccine.
Oh, the rotavirus.
There were problems
with
several.
That's like when a horse gets colic, that's what happens to it. And horses die from that.
It can be really bad for humans, too. The point is that prior to that event, for many years, there would occasionally be so-called hot lots of vaccines identified, but they wouldn't be taken off the market. So I think it's encouraging that we're seeing some recognition that vaccines aren't perfect, and that's something that is really hard to get recognition here in the U.S., but it's happening in Asia, and I'm really encouraged by that. I'm going to go ahead and cut myself off here, Debbie, because we need to go to break, and I don't want to eat in too much to your last half hour, but I just want to remind folks that there is an ongoing, growing list of links to interesting vaccine and other related articles at the Pandemic Response Project website, and that is pandemicresponseproject.com all those words spelled out, pandemicresponseproject.com, and then in the upper right-hand corner on every page is a link to the news page. Encourage folks to go there. You can learn a lot just skimming the titles of the articles that are linked, but, of course, anything that gets your interest, you can click on the link and go read the article and learn more. Always more going on there than we're going to ever have time to cover in live on the show here. So we're going to go to break with that said, and we'll be back in just a few minutes with Debbie Brook of Homeopathy World Community. Don't go away, folks. Stay with us.
Join me, Valerie Ann, on the Truth Exposition Show at Freedomizer Radio in exposing the truth about FEMA camps, drone surveillance, martial law, the New World Order, our threatened freedoms and civil liberties, and for weekly news and current events. Mainstream media continues with its lies and deceit to fulfill the agenda of the New World Order. So please join me in exposing the truth, along with the lies and the deceptions that are being fed to the American people. The people of the United States have a voice, and your voice will be heard through Freedomizer Radio.
Blessings are the storms of life casting their shadow. Is your heart being overcharged with the deceit and devastation of the coming New World Order? Are all the lies making the truth hard to recognize? Let me invite you to join us where the sun shines on the Sound Doctrine Christian Ministries Sunday Fellowship Program at 9 a.m. Pacific Standard Time, 11 a.m. Central Standard Time here on the Freedomizer Radio Network. We'll have occasional guests, our new Christian Common Sense commentaries, and the Christian Update, plus great gospel music. Call in at 347-324-3704 to speak with us or just listen to the show. Or join us in our 24/7 chat room at freedomizerradio.com as we spiritually prepare for the return of our Lord. Blessings and peace to your home. Sound Doctrine on freedomizerradio.com.
Hey everyone, this is Ron from Ron's Media Matrix on the Freedomizer Radio Network. Be sure to catch my show broadcast here every Tuesday from 10 a.m. to 12 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. And if you're listening in another part of the world, that's 1800 to 2000 hours Greenwich Mean Time. We're here covering breaking world news, current geopolitical trends, keeping you up to date on the latest science and technology, along with interviewing a wide range of guests, versed in a variety of special topics, and that's not all. Freedomizer Radio broadcasts 15 hours a day, 7 days a week, with other talk show hosts that cover a wide variety of topics, including health, current events, emergency preparations, spiritual interests, and much, much more. So be sure to stay tuned and at www.freedomizerradio.com. That's www.freedomizerradio.com. And if you're away from your home computer, you can always listen to us on your cell phone by calling 347-324-3704. That's 347-324-3704. And thanks for listening.
Hey there, everyone. This is Chrissy Featherstone, the host of the new show, Real Talk USA, on freedomizerradio.com. Join me every Sunday from 1 to 3 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. This is a seriously but yet funny show. Topics will range from current events to psychological factors in America from the scientific approach, and this will be happening every Sunday. We have musical artists that will also come on, and I love banter from the listeners. The show will also offer and feature listener choice topics every third Sunday. So call in to 347-324-3704 or join us in the chat room at freedomizerradio.com.
We're back with the vaccines and your rights in the U.S., although we're now switching over to Homeopathy World Community with Homeopathy World Community founder Debbie Brook. Debbie, let's see. It looks like your mic is turned off.
Got your mic. Thank you.
Didn't have your mic turned on there for a moment. Sure. No, I'm lucky that I catch it on my own all the time. Debbie, I'm going to turn it over to you, and thank you so much for being here.
Thank you. It's been an exciting and interesting discussion today about all sorts of topics, and it seems as if there's a segue right into today's talk about allergies and allergy reactions and what you can do about that. Of course, always seek your healthcare professional. This is informative, educational information on these shows. Allergies. This is when there's an acute antibody reaction by the body to a protein element in the irritant, which is treated as a foreign body stimulating an inflammatory reaction. So here we've got a lot of words here that everybody's talking about inflammation as being the cause of disease. We're also noting when we talk about vaccinations that vaccinations are stimulating the antibody reactive element of the immune system. So it's purposely doing it. And that's why we have so many hypersensitivities to many of these ingredients of which I was just listing. I didn't list the one peanut oil. So why never before have I heard of children being allergic to peanuts? And this might be one of the reasons. Eggs, that's a common allergy, eggs in children. And supposedly many of them outgrow that. Milk. All of these different things have been changed from their natural form. And therefore, we become highly irritated or sensitive to them. Things also in our environment, such as grasses. So everybody's heard of golden seal being allergic to that, being allergic to hay. And that's why we call it hay fever, which might easily become so irritating into the lungs that you end up with asthma. You can have an allergic reaction to a bee sting, a wasp sting, these kinds of things, because they're injecting toxins into the body. And therefore, there's inflammation and a reaction to try and clear that toxin out of the body. One of the things that homeopaths might recommend, and I have used myself, that worked phenomenally well, when one day I was pulling some weeds without wearing gloves, something you shouldn't do. You always wear your gloves and protect yourself from any kind of different insects that might be sitting on the weeds or a kind of sticky nettle that would definitely penetrate your skin and cause a reaction. Of course, you don't have to have something penetrate your skin if you think about poison ivy, where the aromatics, the oils themselves, some people are so highly allergic, just breathing them in will cause a reaction. One of the remedies used and which worked beautifully for me is called urtica urens, which is stinging nettle. And that helped a tremendous amount of swelling, irritation, and it affects the entire body. If you've ever had that kind of allergic reaction, it's almost like your whole body goes into a response where you can't even keep your eyes open. You kind of collapse and fall down, and some people will have anaphylactic shock and where they can't breathe. That's a really acute reaction. So about this hay fever can lead to congestion, catarrh, sore throat, clearing your throat, irritations in your throat, sore throat. And this can happen to children, adolescents, and adults. It can happen to anybody. All of these conditions, and we are living in a time of global warming, when we live indoors in air-conditioned units, indoors in our car in air-conditioned units, and or heating during the wintertime. And this movement in and out of this climate-controlled areas, which are either too dry and not having enough moisture, or people are not doing well with high humidity. So there are a lot of things that can irritate the body and cause these kinds of reactions. A couple of remedies that are good for immediate responses with hay fever, and we're talking about an acute response, pulsatilla, calicarbonicum, phytolacca, and sulfur are just a few. We have literally hundreds of homeopathic remedies, and you need to find one that's going to match your specific set of symptoms, the etiology, the cause, the reason why you get an allergic response. A little bit more about allergies. And let me tell you first that this coming Monday on the Health Inn, we're going to be having Dr. Deepak Sharma of New Delhi, India. He is our regular co-host on the Health Inn show on Nissan Communications. But I've invited Phyllis Georgic, a homeopath in Pennsylvania, to be another regular co-host and share the limelight with us because she is full of information and lots of experience. So it's going to be great. We're going to be talking about faith in homeopathy and allergy remedies. A little bit more about allergies now. Allergy problems crop up from the time that there's an infancy into the first year and second year of life. People often realize that the baby might be allergic to cow's milk. We're giving so much formula, soy milk, and we kind of tend to not give cow's milk until they're weaned. And then they could be allergic to house dust and mites and dog hair. An allergy would normally be, you would notice it right away if you saw dark rings around your child's eyes. These are often called allergic shiners. A little kid might be having a perpetual cold. In this case, we wouldn't consider it acute anymore. It would be a chronic situation. And there might be diverse other kinds of symptoms in little children, such as colic, crying, screaming child, the baby that is inconsolable, diarrhea, loose bowels, loose stools, and skin response in terms of rashes, rashes around the anus, rashes around the face or the joints, any part of the body, or even hives. The standard medical treatment for allergies is to discover and remove what is the offending substance. And so a lot of times parents are told, remove the carpentry, remove the shades, remove anything that dust can accumulate on, wash your covers, the linens, thoroughly in boiling water, all these kinds of things. And a kid or a person could even be allergic to the type of detergent that you're using. So there are specialized detergents to use for allergic, highly sensitive people. So then you're also going to do a lot of vacuuming and using those HEPA filters so that you're not blowing the dust around. And a lot of other people will go in for allergy injections, a series of dilutions of a particular allergen when you get that testing done on your body to see if there's a response to this in the skin. This is called desensitization. It's kind of similar to homeopathy, except it uses a little bit larger dose than a homeopath would use of an attenuated substance. That means that the substance has been diluted and also shaken or succussed to really get the element, the vibration, the resonance out of the substance. It's just now a form of communication of information rather than giving a crude substance directly into the person via an injection. It's given sublingually under the tongue. And so now I'm going to let you know something that's going on in the medical world. The medical world, the FDA, is now accepting the Merck Allergy Medicine BLA. The Merck announces that the FDA is accepting the biologics license application for an investigational ragweed pollen sublingual allergy immunotherapy tablet. Now, if you didn't use the four words, sublingual allergy immunotherapy tablet, you'd be saying homeopathy, because that's what homeopaths do. They give a minimum dose, a very small dose of an allergic substance, of a toxic substance, of something that would match the symptoms in a well person that got sick from being in proximity to that substance. And so if you see that picture of the rings around the eyes, the runny nose, the congestion, the irritated throat, and all of those things, you might be looking at a homeopathic remedy for a hay fever. Maybe it would be Allium sepa. Maybe it would be something else. Maybe it would be Urtica urens. Maybe it would be Apis mellifica or sulfur. Meanwhile, the medical community is now moving into the world of homeopathy by getting approval for these drugs. And Merck, known as MSD outside the United States and Canada, today announced, and this is not today, that the biologics license for, and this ragweed pollen is called Ambrosia artemisifolia. And Ambrosia is a homeopathic remedy. It has been used for allergic reactions. Did you ever have the itching in the back of the throat, and that you use your tongue to kind of scratch that itch as if you had an irritation on your skin and you would want to scratch it so bad? And it's so bad that you end up, the back of your tongue is rubbing back and forth the palate of your mouth to alleviate that irritation. And so they're using now ambrosia, the ragweed pollen, as an immunotherapy tablet. The other thing, it's also called timothy grass. Timothy grass is Phyllium pratense, and that is also used as sublingual allergy immunotherapy tablet. So both of these grasses, which cause allergic rhinitis with or without conjunctivitis, are being examined and tested and are going to be out there. I don't know whether it will be by prescription only or whether it will need to be by over-the-counter. So there is this review by the Food and Drug Administration to review this application, and it seems to be going through. There is another article, and you can look up farmalive.com. That is about this story, if you want to look up further about the full article about the FDA accepts Merck allergy medicine. Some more information is that pollens from grasses can be highly sensitized to these. And if you think about it, 30 million acres of lawn or grasslands are covering the United States. And these grasses have been manipulated. And many of them possibly could be GMO, which would be a little bit foreign to the body. During the fertilization process of these grasses, the lightweight airborne pollens are released and transmitted by the wind to other plants. When these generally harmless substances are inhaled by people who are sensitive, have seasonal allergies, rhinitis, the body can experience this overreaction of the immune system. And once the body recognizes the pollen, the immune system goes to work, causing all of the signs of sneezing, congestion, runny nose, watery eyes, itching in the eyes, nose, and the throats. The worst part is that asthmatics can have tightness in their chest, hacking cough, and difficulty breathing, and it can get pretty severe. There are many different kinds of grasses besides timothy. There's Bermuda grass, Baha'i orchard, sweet vernal, red top, and bluegrass. Bermuda and Baha'i grass is responsible for these allergies year-round in the southern part of the United States. So they're saying that when you have a lawn that is cut, well cut, you're not going to have all of that pollen floating into the air. So you're going to want to keep your grasses cut short. That is one way to keep it down. The other thing is that molds can easily get stirred up when you're mowing the lawn, so you have to be careful about mold allergies at the same time that you're worrying about your grass allergies. The other thing is that Timothy grass, which is the Phelium pretense, is a forage and hay crop native to Europe and Asia. It was adapted to the North American continent, and it is now common everywhere. So this grass is produced and grown, cut, and used for many, many reasons for feeding your horses and your other farm animals. Besides being probably a ground cover in our yards, or if you have a backyard chicken, you might be using these grasses. So what are the symptoms? I'll repeat them again. From Timothy grass is cough, runny nose, asthma, fever, sneezing, itchy nose, sore throat, watery eyes, puffy eyes, itchy eyes, and difficult breathing, which occurs usually in the early summer while the flowers are pollinating, and toward the end of summer or fall. The wind is going to carry those pollen grains from flower to flower, and if you're in the middle of it, you have to be careful. So what you want to do is stay indoors when the pollen count is high, so check your weather reports, wear a mask if you're mowing the lawn, get somebody else to mow the lawn for you. You could choose a grass that doesn't have very much pollen, like Irish moss or dichondra or other alternatives. Keep the grass short, mowing it frequently. Stay indoors at certain hours of the day, let's say 5 a.m. to 10 a.m. This is when the pollen count is usually the highest, and at 5 p.m. or after a heavy rain. Always keep your home and car windows closed. So if you have air conditioning, that would help in the hot summertime. And avoid the use of windows and attic fans that draw the air into your home. Regularly bathe your pets because they can be attracting in all of these pollens onto their fur coats and bring them into the house. Use a dryer for your clothes because if you hang them outside, the pollen is going to also attach to the clothing. You know, it seems contraindicative to me that people who live in the farm regions of the country might have less allergies because they are living amongst the allergens. This is kind of like getting a dose of the hair of the dog. This is like homeopathy, getting a small dose of the allergen so that the body can acclimate to it. But the question is, what has happened to humans today that they have become so hypersensitized to all of these different substances in our environment that they're having a difficulty getting close to them? The other really interesting fact is that if you minimize your alcohol intake, that will also help reduce your allergic reaction. There was a study done by the National Institute of Public Health in Denmark in 2008 that found a relationship between alcohol use and allergies. Women who drank alcohol every week increased their susceptibility to the allergy by 3%. Alcohol also dehydrates the body, which can make the nasal symptoms worse. Now, you're going to have to balance that with your knowledge about drinking red wine and the good benefits of resveratrol for your heart and for cholesterol. Typical allergy treatments include antihistamines, so Benadryl and things like that, but homeopathically, we might be looking at a remedy, Apis mellifica, which is honeybee. And I kind of indicated that if that toxin will cause an allergic reaction, and many people who have arthritic symptoms will go in for apiary, which is therapy, which is bee sting therapy, to heal their symptoms of rheumatoid arthritis. But homeopathically, there is the remedy of Apis, the honeybee. That might be similar to the response of antihistamines. They also go for oral steroids, which is an immune suppressant. Over a long period of time, it's going to cause a lot of side effects. Then we have injectable steroids, eye drops, and grass allergen immunotherapy treatment. So there's a lot more information all about this particular upcoming drug in the pharmaceutical companies that are going into the realm of homeopathy. Therefore, they will no longer be able to call homeopathy there's nothing in it, or to say that it is fake or quackery, or that they people who are practicing homeopathy are not practicing medicine. They are practicing a 200-year-old, time-tested form of healing. And we only have a few minutes left to today's show. I want to thank everybody who has been listening. I'll talk a little bit, a couple more minutes, and then we will do a send-off. In homeopathy, we have had a remedy called Timothy, which is Philium pratense. It is produced by, manufactured by, Boron, Delisos, Standard Homeopathic, and Remedia. Four different homeopathic pharmacies will carry this remedy. So it is comes in typically the 12C potentization, and it is acts as a desensitizing to hay fever response of asthma, watery coryza, itchy nose and eyes, frequent sneezing, and dyspnea, which is difficulty breathing. It comes from the Gramineae family. This plant family has many, many allergy reactions in sensitive people. Another hay fever remedy is sabadilla, and we're going to talk about that in the upcoming show. I'll remind you again, Monday, on NissanCommunications.com, Health In Show with Debbie Bruck, that's me, Dr. Deepak Sharma, and Phyllis Georgic will be with us at that time. So I'm going to go ahead and sign us out in a few moments, and you can hear the song that Alan has sung for us. Let Freedom Ring, Destiny, Let Freedom Ring, the Destiny music song.
Across this land, both near and far, throughout the human race, within each beating heart, there is a dream whose time has come for us to claim our birthright, each and every one. Evil hands have intervened, controlling from the shadows, think they can't be seen. But we have eyes, see in the dark, to cast a light upon the madness we embark. Let freedom ring throughout the land. Let no one trade your soul for dollars, dirty hands. Demand the truth, transparency, for we must be the masters of our destiny. Upon their face, sincerity, while underneath the self agenda does proceed.
but falsities. Perfumes the air, the scent screams louder than the finest debonair. They'll fill your plate with GMOs, and soon your lineage will never cease to grow. Inject your blood with toxic waste. The world is all but theirs if you'll just die in haste. Let freedom ring throughout the land. Let no one trade your soul for dollars' dirty hands. Demand the truth, transparency, for we must be the masters of our destiny. Let freedom ring throughout the land. Let no one trade your soul for dollars' dirty hands. Demand the truth, transparency, for we must be the masters of our destiny. For we must be the masters.
Thank you for using Blog Talk Radio. Goodbye.